Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome into another edition of the Rocky Top Talk podcast. I am Terry Lambert, joined as always by Evan. Evan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, man. We've got week one of college football to talk about, so honestly, I couldn't be better.
Yes, football is back. Coming off of week one, I guess technically it was week four, but week one for us, week one for real college football. Tennessee comes out on top of South Carolina. Kind of an odd game that turned into a high-scoring affair. We're going to dive into all that, break it down, what stood out to us, what Tennessee did well, what they didn't do so well, what they can improve on going forward. As always, RockyTopTalk.com for all your latest Tennessee news and information. Check us out over there. All right, we'll just dive right into this game here. Tennessee comes out on top 31-27. It takes a botched punt at the end of the game by South Carolina to seal it for Tennessee. Gamecocks were going to have a chance to try and go down and win it. They had to score a touchdown. At that point in the game, kind of felt decent about Tennessee's defensive chances there. The pass rush was actually pretty good there late in the game. DeAndre Johnson, we'll dive into that a little later. But felt good about Tennessee's chances, but thankfully we didn't even need to see that part of it. So 31 points, Tennessee gets a pick six from Henry Toto. That helped things out early. But going back to the start, it was a really slow start. And, you know, you look at this defense, you look at the guys that were out due to the COVID stuff. You know, we don't have a lot of information on the why, but you can just kind of assume what's going on here with the quarantine. A couple of defensive linemen out, Darrell Middleton out. Jalen McCullough couldn't practice. You know, you had Bryce Thompson starting at safety. You had Warren Burrell playing safety. No Sean Schamberger. So a lot of mixing and matching, and South Carolina walked down the field and scored early. So what were your thoughts? What was going through your head in that first quarter?
Not going to lie, I was worried, man, especially after the botched snap on the punt. But then Tennessee's defense really stepped up, came through the big tackle for loss Alante Taylor did on the first down, and that just kind of set things up from there to kind of develop into how they did. I'm not saying tackle for loss was the, you know, turning play of the game or anything like that, but yeah, it didn't look good, but, you know, at the same time, I still remember the Auburn game from a couple years ago whenever in the group chat, whenever you brought this up. You know, team script plays in the beginning. So those first 10-15 plays, usually a good team or a team that's at least has some building blocks on offense is going to find a way to move the ball. More than likely, they're going to find a way to score points. So once you saw Tennessee kind of make the stand, well, not kind of, once you saw them make the stand after the blocked punt, I felt a lot better. And then obviously as the game wore on, felt better and better as the game went on, more and more.
Yeah, so Tennessee ends up starting DeNico Slaughter at the star.
Huge.
Which we've talked about is a really important the position in this defense. Sean Schamberger makes a lot of noise. He's a veteran there. He was out. So Slaughter starts the game. South Carolina went right at him. Shai Smith goes 10 for 140 and a touchdown. And it didn't seem like they were doing anything too complicated. They were just running quick slants. And Tennessee failed to adjust early on. It took a couple of drives. You know, I thought Colin Hill, the South Carolina quarterback, coming off of his third ACL tear, was pretty good, considering it was his first game. But then you saw the defensive staff finally start to adjust, finally get up on him. DeNico Slaughter settled in. You saw a lot of guys settled in. I mean, Elijah Simmons started at nose tackle. with Middleton out. So a lot of changes, a lot of juggling. Something you're going to see, as the season goes on. I think it's important to note nothing's guaranteed. You know, things can change 12 hours before kickoff. Some key players didn't make the trip. Things just changed in a hurry. But I think it reminded me of the entire second half of the 2019 season. Tennessee came out, got hit in the mouth, settled down, and then acted like a group of veterans. And that big play from Henry To'o, who I think is the best player on the football field over the weekend, really changed the game.
When you think about DeNico versus Shy, you've got a senior, I think you're pretty sure he was a senior, wide receiver going against a freshman quarterback. So obviously there's an advantage there as well. That star position is absolutely crucial in this defense. And props to DeNico for taking his lumps and making some plays as the game went on. Obviously he had the big sack, which helped out helped Tennessee out in a major way. And then that's also one of the impressive parts or points about this win is the fact that there were those changes right before the game. Tennessee was on the road. You know, obviously we already mentioned it, the weird off season, and then the fact that, like you said, nothing's guaranteed. That, and it's an SEC win. It's not like, you know, Tennessee went on the road and struggled against North Carolina State or something like that. Or just North Carolina. Well, no, I'm not going to say North Carolina because that's just giving them disrespect these days. Overall, you've got to feel really good about the win. DeAndre Johnson, I was not expecting that. It was absolutely great. And at one point in time, I was kind of like, Daryl Taylor, who? I mean,
yeah.
Hopefully, how do you think he can build off of this performance? And how much does this change the perception of this defense if he's able to be a consistent pass rush threat like this?
Well, that's what I wrote on Sunday. I was like, things are going to change now for DeAndre because now you're not going to get that single tackle on the edge. You're going to get a tight end.
Right.
You're going to get a running back every time. So you're going to have to beat two guys more often, which is good. You know, by the way, it's good. It forces attention to one player, frees up other people. For Tennessee to have that alpha pass rusher, you know, they made me look stupid because I wrote last week that pass rusher was their biggest weakness. And
you couldn't complain, though. Jeremy Pruitt himself even said
he
was happy with it, you know?
Yeah, I just didn't know who was going to emerge. I thought it was possible a freshman could emerge late in the year, but to see him come out totally transformed, 2.5 sacks in 2019. He gets 2.5 sacks on Saturday night. It's a senior. He's been here, done that, been in the program. Seems like he really committed over this weird off season, and really looked as explosive as he's ever looked. It looked like Daryl Taylor, to use your line there. He looked every bit like Daryl Taylor. Now, can he be consistent? I don't know. Like I said, he's going to get a lot more attention, but. That was a big development, and a couple other guys too. Tyler Barron, looking like Derek Barnett in that number 9 jersey, freshman coming through, making 2 tackles for loss, looked really really powerful. So I thought he made a big impact. Keevon Bennett, you know, yeah. DeAndre Johnson was firing off the edge, and Keevon was there trying to clean things up. So I thought the defensive front was really good, all things considered. Had a couple guys out, but particularly the edges really performed.
And if Tennessee can get, like you were saying, a consistent performance like this from the defensive front, that's going to help out that back end so much. And that's something that will help this defense become just more of a complete defense, because even though obviously the secondary struggled against Shy Smith or just whoever was in that slot position, that strong slot position against whoever was playing time, which oftentimes it was DeNico Slaughter. Even with that issue, Tennessee secondary still had a strong night, in my opinion, and that's going to change, obviously, depending on what's going on with Schamberger. Pruitt didn't really allude to much on that during his Monday press conference. He just said it wasn't a disciplinary reason, which is good, but these days, anything outside of that is pretty much a toss-up as to what it could be. Once he comes back, then you have to feel a lot better about this defense. So it was encouraging to see, man, and just overall really happy with that side of the ball and how they played, especially Toho Toho, dude. I mean, hey, we haven't mentioned him. Hey, that touchdown return, yeah. I mean, dude, the fact that he stayed in bounds just shows how much of an athlete he is.
He's awesome. He's a tackling machine. I think he had 13 total tackles, something like that.
He's crazy, man.
He's probably going to shatter all kinds of records, and especially if he sticks around with this extra year. But I have a feeling he's probably going to be headed to the NFL whenever he can, and who could blame him? You know, wrapping up the defensive side, I thought it was interesting that Bryce Thompson didn't really man up on Shai Smith. I thought that was an adjustment that they could make, but they kind of left Slaughter there. I think that tells you what they think of him. Throwing him immediately into that role. So you're right. There's a lot of it's another level to this defense. I think the defensive front bailed out the secondary with that pressure. It was totally unexpected to me, but I think they changed the game enough and slowed South Carolina down enough, did just enough to find the win. And then those couple turnovers, of course. Jeremy Pruitt loves his turnovers. Really sealed this game up. Offensive side of the ball, you know what we got to start with.
Oh, really? No.
Fifth year senior Jared Garantano looks just like the same quarterback we've been used to seeing. And look at his stat line: 19 of 31, 259, and a touchdown. It's fine. It's fine. It's just not going to get Tennessee to the elite level, right? And it's the consistency. You know, you see him drop that beautiful throw into the bucket of Josh Palmer there, and then you see him misfire on a 5-yard drag route and throw it 4 yards over the receiver's head. It's just maddening. He is what he is at this point. It says something that Tennessee doesn't have anything to compete with him right now. I think Harrison Bailey, that whole deal, losing the spring and then putting him in quarantine, that was a big blow. Maybe he could have pushed him, but Garantano is what he is, and you know, I said it on game night, it's just not good enough to win at an elite level.
Here's what I'm hoping, because, you know, I get we're talking about college football. However, I'm kind of the new style mindset: throw it on second and short or third and short, run it early on first down, so on and so forth. So this is my just personal desire. However, I feel like it has some logic to it, to your unbiased or even possibly to somebody on the other side of the fence who likes to run the ball and establish the run, so on and so forth. I'm hoping that Garantano's issues with just whatever the play that happens where he has an issue, whether it's overthrowing a receiver, so on and so forth, puts the Vols in a situation where they're going to want to actually throw it on these second and short, so on and so forth, because what that will do is it will keep defenses honest. It'll keep defenses from stacking the box. And then Jim Chaney, we've seen, creative enough. We've got guys like Ty Chandler who can move in space, and then Eric Gray, who's also very good just in between the tackles, but also out in space as well. You lighten the box, and then boom, you hit them with a run out of shotgun or out of 11 personnel, whatever. So I'm actually hoping that somehow these deficiencies, that Tennessee finds a way to mold whatever Garantano's wild card might be, or Garantano, rather. But, man, it's so disheartening watching him miss these guys as wide open as they are, especially like the opening deep shot to Ramel Keaton just down the sideline. I mean, the Vols aren't going to beat your elite teams not making those plays. And sure, like you said, his stats are great. However, they could be better. They could be so much better. The Vols could have been so much better on Saturday night. They could have scored 42 points. You know, they let two touchdowns off the board. But granted, the Palmer throw was absolutely beautiful. The check down to Gray was great awareness and a willing to adjust or a willing to, you know, read the field, so on and so forth. And, man, honestly, I feel like the offensive line helped him out a lot as well. But still, he's got to start making those throws. He can't have those lapses like he had on Saturday night if the Vols want to win, you know, six or seven games this year.
And, you know, it's interesting, your point, because I think the coaching staff trusts him.
Same here.
31 attempts, and if you'll think back to the fourth quarter, Jim Chaney's sitting there dialing up passes, you know, with under five to go. That was frustrating to me because I felt like it was a point in time where the Tennessee offensive line could have taken over. You know, they came out in three to four consecutive plays in that power goal line set and just rammed it down their throat. And I wanted to see that continue. But Jim Chaney goes to the air, trusts his quarterback, and it just doesn't go well. And that's not even on Garantano. But I'm just talking about the drives in the third quarter, you got a chance to go put this team away, drive the nail into the coffin, and you're missing 7-yard curls, you're missing slants, you're missing drags. It's just there's so much meat left on this bone for this Tennessee offense. I don't know what to say. I don't want to keep railing on the guy, but it's just frustrating to watch. You know, and I think Jim Chaney can help him out. I think he can make things a little easier. He's got two absolutely electric running backs, Todd Chandler, Eric Gray, who he can get in space and offer easy completions to. You know, I'd like to see more work in the screen game, more of those throws where Jarrett doesn't have to think, doesn't have to make a difficult throw. I think that would help him out a lot. Just getting your two best offensive threats in space with the football. When you've got this big, nasty offensive line and everyone's expecting to run it, just throw a screen out there. I'd really like to see that. And also, to your point, Tennessee can kind of spread the field if everyone's expecting them to keep running this ball. They can kind of spread the field with four receivers there. And kind of open things up and then go run the football. So there's some adjustments there from Jim Chaney specifically that I'd like to see that I think would really help out Jarrett.
Definitely. And I mean, when you, I know it's only 1 week, but when you look at Mississippi State and Ole Miss over there, you know, maybe spreading them out isn't such a bad idea after all.
Yeah, the Pirates got him a win against LSU. We're going to get into that in a second. Finishing up with the offense, Josh Palmer looked every part of the wide receiver one that he is supposed to be. He goes 6 for 85 with a touchdown, hauled in the big touchdown late from Garantano. That was a key answer when things were kind of tilting South Carolina's way. Brandon Johnson made that awesome catch down the sideline one-handed. He's got one of the weirder careers ever in college. He was the leading receiver in 2017. They couldn't find the field for 3 years, and now he's back as a redshirt senior, redshirted last year. He looked the part as a wide receiver, too. Velus Jones Jr., they used him a ton in the short passing game. That was kind of a surprise to me. Mm-hmm. They're going to get him, you know, 5, 6, 7 touches a game. Didn't see a lot out of the freshman. Didn't see a lot out of the tight ends, but it looked like it was Princeton Fant's show at the tight end position. So what kind of stood out to you at receiver?
So, you know, you were being hard on yourself earlier for your defensive line pick or the pass rush, whatever, as being the weakest part of the team. I picked wide receiver, and that was honestly one of the stronger parts of the team, especially the offense on Saturday night. I was really impressed with the receivers, especially Josh Palmer. You know, I've been high on him since a couple years ago, since his sophomore year. 6 receptions, 85 yards, 1 touchdown. He had a long of 32, which was obviously the touchdown, so showed that he had the deep ball ability there, still there. And then he was making intermediate catches. He was making short catches. He's really becoming a wide receiver one. And I mean, I'm so excited to see what can happen with him. Obviously, Brandon Johnson looked good. I mean, you mentioned it with the highlight catch, and then, I mean, three catches, 73 yards, and 24.3-yard average. He looks like he might be the deep threat kind of wild. Josh Palmer obviously still has the deep threat, but will begin to work that intermediate of the area of the field more often. Really like how they used Ramil Keaton. Obviously, he would have had a way bigger night if Garantano was more accurate. And then I'm with you, man. I really wanted to see Ty Chandler used as a receiver just more often. One catch, 10 yards, sure, that's great. But, man, he can just do so much more, especially in the short area.
It just seems like if you watch any NFL game, you see the running back involved heavily in the passing game, no matter what team you're watching. It just seems like easy yards with those two and their ability. Yeah. It was frustrating last year. They kind of did it against Indiana, but went away from it again here. So that's something to watch. None of the freshmen. Tennessee's got four freshmen receivers that all could make an impact. D-back was actually working with the running back, 6'5", 220-pound running back. did not make the trip, but, man, I'm excited to see that guy carry the football. I saw Jalen Hyatt get a couple snaps. I think he got one target. That was his home state. So interested to see if those guys can carve out a role. But, honestly, these veterans seem to have the top four on lockdown, which is good to see. That's how it should be. I think it's a big advantage for Tennessee with limited practice and a strange offseason. So you don't want to be introducing freshmen into a new offense. So I think that's a big advantage for Tennessee. All right, we're going to take a short break. We will be right back, and we're going to kind of look around the SEC. All right, we are back. Going to take a look around the SEC, see who won, lost, who was impressive, who was not so impressive. I think we got to start out with Mississippi State. Mike Leach, Tennessee was supposed to be the SEC team that brought in Leach for his SEC experience. You know, that wild coaching search happened, and the Leach deal fell apart. So I was excited to see him take the Mississippi State job. And I had a sneaky suspicion that he might give LSU all they wanted. I think LSU sent 15 or something to the 15 starters in the NFL. So
something crazy.
And the two coordinators gone.
That would work too. 100 would work too.
Yeah. Two coordinators gone. You know, call me crazy. I'm not sure Ed O is that talented of a head coach to make up the difference for all of that. And, of course, they struggled. So Mississippi State topples them 44-34. The Pirate gets his first SEC win, and they threw for over 600 yards, and Mississippi State actually looked pretty dang legit.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree with the results, and you couldn't ask for anything more for Mississippi State than to go on the road. What, the Tigers are sixth best team in the country, week one or something like that, or that was what they were ranked. To go into LSU and beat them while they're also the defending national champions. The one thing, though, that kind of gets me, and I granted, like I was just talking about, you know, this kind of runs contradictory what I was just talking about with the Vols. However, Mississippi State only had, I think, like 20 yards on the ground or something whenever you subtract or like net yards. And that's not just not going to happen. That's not going to work in the SEC long term. But regardless, man, for them to go in there and do that, take them, the Tigers down, not just to win on like a last second field goal either, to win by 10 points, it's got some heads turned for sure. It's got my attention, and definitely going to be paying attention to see what Leach can do. But here's the thing, so they've got this win to build off of, even if they do end up with like a 6-4 season, you know, something just pretty good, but, you know, not earth shattering. This win enough should be enough, or this win alone, rather, should be enough to get some pretty damn good recruits in next year, which is only going to help further this process for Mike Leach.
I mean, that's a program that you'd want to go be a part of. I mean, right. That's awesome. Who, what receiver isn't going to go commit to that and go put up 200 yards a game? I think he can win quickly with his system. You know, I've always kind of said it's like the flex bone, triple option style offense. It gives teams without elite talent a chance to beat elite teams because it's just something different to prepare for. And lo and behold, instantly it pays off. I don't know if he can build this long term, but just instantly installing his stuff and going out and beating LSU is very impressive.
Well, and on the defensive side of the ball, they had 7 sacks and 2.
Yeah, yeah.
So that right there, I mean, hell, like I was saying, you have to have a running game in the SEC. Well, defense will definitely get it done. So it's not just offense, apparently. I mean, 7 sacks and 2 interceptions is nothing to balk at.
Definitely a early transformation there. Also impressive, Florida puts up 51 points. I know the Ole Miss defense might be one of the worst in the league. But Kyle Trask, that's a guy you're going to have to deal with. That's a guy you're going to have to go through to win the East for sure. Maybe to win the entire thing. They beat Ole Miss 51-35. Lane Kiffin's offense looked pretty good. Put up 35 points. I think it says something that the Gators gave up 35 points to Ole Miss. Maybe that's a potential weakness there. But Kyle Trask is a major, major difference maker. And when you compare him to someone like Jerry Garantano, you know, we were saying he's not good enough to beat the elite. That's one of the elite that you're going to have to beat. And that's just hard to see right now.
It's crazy to think that just a couple years ago, the Vols and Gators were playing. People were like, Kyle Trask, you know, I can't remember the exact stat, but hasn't started a game since high school, or has only started 2 games since high school, and now he's could potentially win the Heisman Trophy this year. I mean, it's just Dan Mullen, dude. He knows how to work these quarterbacks. He knows how to just maximize the hell out of the signal callers that play for him, and that's one reason why I wanted him at Tennessee so bad. Like, I honestly think he can make JG, you know, a routine, you know, 300-yard to 3 touchdown type guy. And I mean, yeah, 35 points is impressive. And this is just me also throwing shade at Lane Kiffin just because it's Lane Kiffin. But I think the Gators were up like 41-21 heading into the fourth quarter or something like that. So, yeah, 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter is nice. And a lot of times it's going to win you games. But at the same time, the Gator defense could have been lax. I don't know. I haven't watched the game at all. Honestly, I haven't watched one snap from that game. So I'm kind of showing my ass on that one. But either way, dude, Kyle Trask, 416 yards, 6 touchdowns. You cannot argue against that. And yeah, man, he's gonna be a force to deal with this year for sure.
Yeah, Lane's got a tough road ahead in Oxford.
Oh, my God.
I think that's a couple years at least.
You hate to see it.
It'll be interesting. It'll be entertaining. By the way, we were absolutely robbed of SEC Media Days with Michael Leach and Lane Kiffin. Just throwing that out there. I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
That's going to be very entertaining, hopefully, next year. Kentucky hangs with Auburn early. Auburn pulls away late. That's kind of the way I saw that one going. I don't know. Kentucky is just a few steps away. Everyone was hyping up Terry Wilson. Wasn't super impressed with him overall. Auburn pulls away and wins that one. Team of interest here is Georgia. Georgia had a fascinating game against Arkansas.
Right.
That game was 7-5. And it goes into the third quarter. Arkansas is holding a lead. I think it was 10-5. And then Georgia eventually turns it on and pulls away. Big story there. Georgia's quarterback situation was just putrid. They roll out Bennett. They roll out Mathis. Bennett turned it on in the second half. JT Daniels has now been cleared, so you would expect him to start after Jamie Newman opts out and is preparing for the NFL draft. So JT Daniels, definitely one to watch, and him getting cleared is a big deal for the Bulldogs because that was a team that I don't think can even hang with Florida. And, you know, if they put that effort onto the field against Tennessee, I think the Vols would have a pretty good shot at beating them.
We talked about it a few weeks ago when we did the last podcast. This Georgia game is circled on my calendar, and this is the exact reason why. Obviously, it was a lot more clear when Jamie Newman was still in the fold when we last talked about it, and he was likely going to be the starter. However, if there were any kind of lumps in the road, we didn't know how Georgia was going to react, so on and so forth. And him opting out, it just completely threw this situation for a loop. Yeah, man. I mean, what if JT Daniels, almost said JT Shrout, what if JT Daniels struggles next week? Do you still have the confidence to start him against, you know, hopefully a Tennessee defense that just shut down Sean Robinson or Connor Basliak, I believe that's how he pronounces the last name, whoever plays next week for Missouri? You know, it's going to leave a lot of questions. And honestly, you know, Tennessee is a lot better than Arkansas. And something tells me that if Georgia struggles in the first half like they did against Tennessee, like they did against Arkansas, it's going to be a lot worse than a 7-5 deficit. So Georgia's got a lot to figure out this week. And, man, I mean, trust me, I'm going to have both my eyes, glasses, everything on that game to see how they play this week, because depending on what happens, it's going to say a lot about going into the Week 3 matchup with the Vols.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, too, because this would be a hell of a week to welcome the Citadel to Athens. But
right,
exactly. You don't get that this year.
Nope.
You welcome the Auburn Tigers. So you're going to have to figure it out on the fly. You're going to have to toss him into the fire. You're going to have to decide, is he playing well enough that we can roll with this, or do you change it up and you know, try and win the game? But I think Daniels is the ultimate answer. But how quickly does he take to that offense? You know, is he even ready to go?
And his health, that's the biggest thing.
It's a really interesting situation there. Auburn and then Tennessee, so a big couple weeks for the Georgia Bulldogs and quite a few questions there. All right, final game. Well, I guess we should mention that the Vanderbilt Commodores played A&M really 30 tough.
30-point underdog. Yeah, man.
Yeah. I mean, A&M. I'm never going to be a believer in Jimbo Fisher. He's overhyped every year, and they're just not ever going to go compete with Alabama, LSU, Auburn consistently. I don't think they're ever going to get over that hump. Maybe I'm wrong, but to this point in time, he's just been a gigantic letdown. Impressed with Vanderbilt rolling out a freshman quarterback. You know, everyone kind of buried them before the season started. They had a ton of opt-outs, but so that was a surprise of week one. Final game is the Missouri-Alabama game. Of course, Tennessee will welcome Missouri next week. Alabama rolled in this one. 38-19 was the final. I'm not sure what the halftime score, but Bama flipped over. It was 28-3, something like that.
Yeah.
Bama pulled their starters at halftime. So Missouri is an interesting evaluation because we know nothing about them.
Yeah, man, 100%. And I mean, we don't, just kind of like Georgia, we don't really know what their quarterback situation is going to be like. Sean Robinson got the start, but Connor Basliak did come in later on during the game. I never really liked the Eli Drinkwitz hire to begin with. I know he did some good things. I can't think of it right off the top of my head. I think North Carolina State, maybe. Is that where he came from?
NC State offensive coordinator. Then he spent a year at App, where App
that's
just.
Right,
you
that's
know.
Right. App State. Yeah.
Yeah.
App State. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, they've always had a solid program. We know all well about that from the meeting a few years ago. But they've got a lot to figure out. Got to watch out for Larry Roundtree, though, this week. He's an absolute playmaker. But then outside of him, though, Tyler Bay's a good deep threat. But outside of him, I'm not really too worried about Missouri this week.
Yeah, Tennessee opened as a 13-point favorite. That number's actually been bet down quite a bit. I think it's sitting at 11. It touched 9 today
and
worked back to 11. So,
dude, I don't bet college football, but I might take that all day.
That's, yeah, Yeah, especially if it gets under 10. I just think Tennessee's physicality, Tennessee's continuity, you know, you're not installing a new offense. I think that is a big, big deal.
Exactly.
Especially against teams like South Carolina. South Carolina installing a new offense.
Yep.
Had to do it during a pandemic. Missouri welcoming an entirely new coaching staff. I just think for teams like that, unless you are Mike Leach, it's gonna be rough. Any closing thoughts as we wrap up this podcast there, Evan?
I mean, dude, you led into it perfectly. There's so much inconsistency in terms of what teams are trying to do, new systems being installed, new head coaches, new quarterbacks that Tennessee faces on their schedule this year. For a while there, it was leading towards, and I was going to write an article about this, where the Vols were literally going to face a new quarterback in every single game, but Auburn being put on the schedule and Texas A&M being put on the schedule kind of ruined that. Regardless, continuity is key. And Tennessee, man, if they can improve, I really liked what I saw Saturday night. Obviously, they've got some things to work on, but I really liked what I saw Saturday night, especially them going on the road. If they could continue to build on what we saw, there is a very good chance this team could squeeze out 7 wins this season, and this is coming from a guy who predicted them to go 5-5 this year.
Yeah, continuity and resiliency, you know, just
and,
to
and,
see.
And they learn how to win. They're like, real quick, too, but the South Carolina fumble at the end of the game remind me of Tennessee trying to find their way under the early Bush.
Oh, yeah.
You know, being there at the end of the game, but then they just do something just back-breaking at the end because of lack of experience, whatever. And also that makes it so ironic that a freshman and Jimmy, I can't think of his
Jimmy
last
Holiday,
name.
Jimmy Holiday, yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy Holiday. I almost said Jimmy Holmes for some reason. But Jimmy Holiday landed on the fumble and recovered the ball, had the awareness to make the play. So there's just so much to like about Saturday night. And if they just keep building like we think they're going to and like they're supposed to, then there's a very good chance at a very good season.
Yeah, resiliency, that game, like I said, reminded me of every game down the stretch in 2019. Right. You know, you think back to Kentucky, you think back to the Missouri game, you know, just learning how to win, the Indiana game. Even that Alabama game, which 100%. I still will say is a turning point for Jeremy Pruitt's entire program, proving that he belonged on the same field with Alabama that night. From that point forward, it's been a consistent effort from this team. You know, like we said, just need a consistent effort under center. unfortunately. We'll see how that goes, though. All right. Thanks for listening. I'm gonna do some things with the Missouri site over there. We're gonna have a lot of previews for this going this game this weekend. Evan's gonna have his preview, 3 keys, all that good stuff. I'll be telling you what Jeremy Pruitt told the media today. So follow us over there, RockyTopTalk.com. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time.